So yeah, this might be your first time at Butterfield. You may have been many times before. Welcome, especially if this is your first festival. So Lokabandhu did a talk yesterday, which many of you may have attended. And so this is a kind of follow-on looking at meditation. So I'll be talking about Buddhist meditation today. And I'm going to talk for a while, maybe 20 minutes, half an hour, and then open it up to questions. So we'll have a question and answer session at the end. And I think these talks have been programmed in because previous years at Butterfield there hasn't been so many introductory talks. So we're looking to just give you some basic fundamental principles of Buddhism. You may already know what I'm about to say, it might be new to you. I'm just going to give an overview of meditation within Buddhist practice, so Buddhist meditation. So thank you for the introduction, Sangadhara, brother. So I'm based in Sheffield. There's a Sheffield Buddhist Centre in Sheffield, and we run courses there introducing Buddhism and meditation. So a lot of what I'm about to say is how we introduce meditation to people who are coming along wanting to try out Buddhist meditation in Sheffield. And yeah, this series is called The Taste of Freedom, which comes from an ancient quote of the Buddha's that his teaching has the taste of freedom. And yeah, yesterday we had ethics, today we have meditation, and tomorrow wisdom. And ethics, meditation, and wisdom is one of the simplest formulations of the Buddhist path. It's kind of the Buddhist path in its totality, ethics, meditation, and wisdom. They're all related. It's hard to differentiate sometimes the kind of clear boundary between them because they interrelate. We can practice all three of them all of the time, but they do connect. So if we sit down to meditate, if we're acting in ways that we're not happy with or that niggle us, it's going to be difficult to sit and meditate, so we might want to look at our ethical choices in life. And also, as we meditate, we may be reflecting on our views, on the world, on our experience, and that is wisdom, in a sense, and Buddhism has a lot to say there. So they all interrelate. And it may be difficult to kind of move through all three without looking at one of the other. So you'll get a sense of that in your own practice. But today I'm going to talk about meditation, and then we'll have question and answers. So meditation is a practice that is based in Buddhism. There's many meditations happening all across Butterfield, some of which will be flavoured with Buddhist values, some of which may not be, because there's meditation in all spiritual walks of life, all religions, you could say. But meditation is also a Buddhist practice, and there's a wide variety of Buddhist meditations. Buddhism spread across the world over thousands of years, so there's all sorts of different meditations that you can do. The Buddha taught many things. He taught mindfulness and awareness. He also taught love and compassion. So there are Buddhist meditations that focus on these qualities of awareness, of love, and I'm going to talk about that a bit more. But yeah, there is a variety of meditations beyond that. He taught many aspects of reality. In these meditations that might focus on what one could say is cultivation of awareness or love and compassion, in a sense, we're looking to cultivate these qualities, but it might also be that we're kind of tuning into them already in our experience, or accessing awareness, accessing love that is there to be, that we can be receptive to. So it can be both a cultivation and a kind of receptivity. So I'm not going to lead a meditation now, I'm going to talk about it. But we have a meditation tent up in the top field with led guided meditations every day. Some of you may have gone along. They're at 10, at 11:15 and at 12:30, and then there's a workshop at 4:30. So that's kind of the how we might meditate doing Buddhist meditation. So if you're interested in how to meditate as a Buddhist, then you can go to these guided meditations. I'm going to be talking about kind of why a Buddhist might meditate and what might happen in a Buddhist meditation. What might you expect to experience or find when you're doing a Buddhist meditation? So where does meditation sit in Buddhism? So this theme is called the taste of freedom. So freedom, liberation, as Sangadhara was saying, you could say that's enlightenment. That's something that we can all experience. We can all experience freedom. And we're experiencing freedom from habits or cycles that are keeping us fixed and stuck in ruts. And Loka Bandhu was talking about that a lot yesterday in his talk on ethics. So we can experience freedom from our habitual cycles and our behaviours that are maybe holding us back or keeping us small, keeping us in a kind of limited sense of ourselves, or keeping a limited view of other people or of the world. So we may have limited views that we're not even aware of, and through meditation we can free ourselves from these habitual limited views. And that may be of ourselves or of other people or of the world. So yeah, why might we meditate? In Buddhism, there are three aspects. So Buddhists like lists. So I'm going to be bringing a couple of lists to you. So in Buddhism, there's three aspects that we can see how we might live a meaningful life of value. And if we're living a life of meaning of a value for us, that's probably because the life that we're living is in accord with our reason, so our thinking mind, our thought, our reason, our cognitive faculty, and our intuition, so our kind of felt sense of how we want to live, what we think life is about, and our experience, so what we're actually finding as we're going about life. Is it working for us? Are we happy? Are other people around us happy? You know, is our experience of life fulfilling? So if we have a life that's in accord with our reason, our intuition, and our experience, then we're going to feel like it's a meaningful life, a life of value. And we can tune into these three aspects through ethics and through wisdom, and I think that will come through in the other talks, but we can definitely tune into them through meditation. So in meditation, we can find a clarity of mind, a kind of a clear thinking or knowing in thought. So our reason can become clarified, purified. Our intuition can also, we can tune in more to our intuition in meditation. There can be a kind of a depth to what we're experiencing, a kind of an inner voice might come as everything stills, as we're sitting, as meditation happens. We may hear our inner voice of intuition more loudly, more clearly. And we will also come to know how we're experiencing the world a little bit more. We'll come to know how we're feeling about how we're living, whether we're happy with that, whether we're not, whether we're happy with the actions that we're taking, whether our life is working, and whether we think we've kind of got it down. You know, our experience will tell us that as we're meditating. So that's one reason why we might meditate, to tune into these. What is our reason telling us? What is our intuition telling us? And what is our experience telling us about how we want to live? So that's a bit about why we might meditate. And another reason, another way that Buddhists see meditation is that it's like a mind training. So it's working directly on the mind. Often in meditation, we'll close our eyes, we'll be in a quiet place sometimes. We'll be focusing on maybe the breath or the heart. And things can become quite still. Our thinking can kind of still, and there can be this clarity that I'm describing. So we're working directly on our minds. And when we're doing that, we might find that we have some views on the world. And this is going to be brought out a lot tomorrow, I think, in the talk on wisdom. So in meditation, we'll become clear on what our views on the world are. There's another kind of way that the Buddha taught about how life is, where he said we have these kind of topsy-turvy views. We think things should or be or are permanent and they're just going to stay the same. We think things will be substantial and that they definitely exist. They're separate and they definitely exist. And we think that things should be kind of satisfactory. We want things to work out for ourselves. So in meditation, we can be working directly on whether we have those views, whether we think those views are true, and whether we can open up to any other kind of view or any other kind of way of living. This will come out tomorrow, I think, in the wisdom talk. That actually, we can change, we can grow. We're not permanent, nothing is permanent, there is impermanence. Things are interrelated, connected with each other. So are we, we're all interrelated. And life has its ups and downs. There is suffering, there is pain in life. But inner contentment can be found. And again, meditation can help us to kind of look at, is this true for us? What are our views on life? And kind of embed more any helpful views that we think might move us through life in a more positive way. So that's a little bit about why Buddhists might meditate. And now I'm going to talk a bit about what a Buddhist meditation might kind of look like or what you might do and what might happen when you're doing meditation. So there are many different practices, as I've been saying. You can go to the meditation tent up in the top field to learn some Buddhist meditation. There's so many meditations happening all across the workshops here. There's a kind of another formulation of the path which has worked for me, and that we kind of present as part of the Triratna Buddhist order that I belong to. And that is that all of us, wherever we're starting from, we'll have all sorts of different parts of ourselves that take us in different directions. So we might do a meditation that helps us to kind of ground ourselves and for us to become more aware of ourselves in our entirety, like all the different parts of ourselves, all the different things that we might want to do, all the different ways that we behave. We might want to do this one day, but we want to do that another. So some meditations help us to kind of ground and kind of collect ourselves and understand ourselves in our entirety. There are other meditations that help us to tune into our emotional world, our emotional sense, and look to kind of cultivate or tune into positive mental states, positive qualities in ourselves and in the world. So love, compassion, gratitude, joy, and they're another kind of, if you like, set of meditations that one might do as a Buddhist. So grounding ourselves, understanding ourselves in our entirety, and also maybe tuning into or lifting our emotional sense to positive qualities like love, compassion, gratitude. And we can also kind of, for want of a better phrase, kind of let go into these practices and find that we might not be how we think we are, and the other people might not be how they think they are, or how we think they are, and the world might be different to how we think it is. So there's a kind of a shift that can happen in meditation as well, where kind of something opens up and we kind of let go or surrender and see that we could be different, we could see the world differently, we could act differently. So that can happen as part of meditation. Meditation we do in our bodies. So meditation is something that is embodied. So that's an important part of meditation. And we can also look to cultivate or find a kind of a balance between two states. So we're looking for calm, for stillness, but we're also looking for a kind of alert, energy. And ideally, we have both. And ideally, we cultivate or tune in and become receptive to them both in our experience. So calm and alertness. And if we can find some kind of balance between these two, that's great, because often we might think we have one and not the other. Ideally, we have as much as of both of them. And they form a kind of cohesive part of our meditation. We're calm, we're still, but there's also an alert, kind of upright energy. And I've got an example for this, which is that I'm in Sheffield, I live in Sheffield, and I've got a lot of friends who climb. There's good climbing around Sheffield. I've climbed, but I don't climb, generally. And there's, my friends say that when you're climbing a rock, you need to have focus. You need to know where your next move is going to be, and you need to be quite poised. But you also need to be relaxed, because if you're too intent on the next move, or if you're too kind of, I think they call it in the grip, then you're kind of stuck. But also if you're too relaxed, if you're too kind of like, if you're not putting any effort in at all, you're going to fall off. So here's that balance between calm and alertness, focus and relaxation. And there's a great story from the Buddha's time with this of a lute player called Sona. So we might have some musicians here in the room. Anybody play anything here? Ooh, you're shy. So if you've got a stringed instrument, okay, then it has to be tuned in a particular way. And there was this friend of the Buddha who was doing some walking meditations. I haven't mentioned that. You can do walking meditation. And he was really, really effortful. He was like, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to really crack through, break through to something if I just keep doing this walking meditation. But he was finding he was getting all these blisters and sores on his feet. And he used to be a lute player, and he was enjoying his life as a musician, but he'd left that to be a disciple of the Buddha. And he was thinking, God, this walking meditation's pretty hard, actually. I'm not really getting anywhere. Maybe I'll go back to being a musician. That was much more enjoyable. And he talks to the Buddha about how hard he's finding this walking meditation. And the Buddha says to his friend Sona, he says, if the strings on your lute are too tight, what kind of noise does it make? Does it make a beautiful sound? And Sona says, no, it's like a plink. And the Buddha says, and if the strings on your lute are too loose, does that make a beautiful sound? And he says, no, it's just kind of like a thwack. And the Buddha says, well, just in your lute, in your music playing, as in meditation, there's this balance between being too loose and relaxed and too tight and too effortful. And then there's the beauty. You can find the beauty in that balance. And that's important. Beauty, enjoyment, even pleasure is important in our meditation practice. If we're not enjoying it, we're not going to want to do it. So we need to find a kind of a way in which we can engage, maybe how long we're meditating, how often, what kind of practices we're doing that is kind of working for us in some way. And this moves me on to what might happen when we're meditating. So if we're not finding beauty and pleasure and ease, we might be finding things a bit difficult. And this can happen when we sit to meditate. We can find all sorts of things come up in our minds, in our feelings. It can be quite stormy at times even. And this is to be expected. So a lot of people come to learn meditation and they say, oh, I can't really do it because I can't stop thinking. My mind just carries on. It's so distracted. I'm just going over and over things. So I can't meditate. And it's really important to say that meditation isn't just not thinking, because it's impossible to go from our kind of active, engaged life where we're thinking and planning and doing, sit down and just not think. So meditation is a lot about awareness. It's about just noticing what's happening, acknowledging it, watching it, observing it, understanding it. And there are practices that help us to still our minds, to come back to, say, the breath or to the heart, to goodwill, to love and to kindness, as a way to kind of
train our mind. If we're thinking, if we're distracted, noticing that, that's awareness and bringing it back to the focus. So that is meditation, noticing, oh, I'm off here, I'm off there, and coming back to the focus of the meditation. And depending on what practice you're doing, that focus will be different. There are some traditional hindrances to meditation in Buddhism. So a hindrance, it's a strange word, I don't think I really used it until I started using it in this context, but a hindrance is something that kind of gets in the way, it's an obstruction, it's hindering us from moving through to something of beauty, of joy, of ease. So there are these traditional hindrances to meditation in Buddhism. And in a way, they're all that stand in between us and liberation and freedom. So if we can understand what these hindrances are and know how to work with them, then we'll experience freedom and liberation. So I'm just going to list these as five. Good old list. So these hindrances that you might experience when you sit down to meditate are sense desire. Sense desire. So that's when we're kind of... I use the example of ice cream. I might sit down to focus on my breath, and instead I'm like, oh, ice cream. I love ice cream. I really want some ice cream. When might I have some ice cream? So anything that's kind of appealing, it can be a thought, it can be a sensation, it can be a memory, it can be a plan for the future, another person, you know, anything that we're kind of getting caught into thinking about because it's pleasurable to think about that, we're desiring something. And this can come up a lot in meditation because we're often having our eyes closed. And so there's no what we call input. There's nothing coming in to give us pleasure. So our mind starts presenting all sorts of other things that might be lovely. So that's sense desire, that might happen. Then we have ill will, otherwise known as aversion. So this is kind of thinking, oh, you know, my friend said that earlier, and why did she say that? And or I said that back, and it's kind of getting into the who don't you like, what don't you like, blaming, kind of thinking that it shouldn't be this way. That's ill will or aversion. The next is anxiety and restlessness. So anxiety is kind of thinking over things over and over and over, trying to find some solution but not really being able to. And restlessness is the kind of physical kind of itchy kind of, I can't sit still for this long, I must get up and do something, or I've got that to-do list and maybe I really need to get on with it. Then we have sloth and torpor. So sloth is physical, like, laziness, if you like, or kind of despondency, apathy, maybe I won't meditate because actually I'm just gonna have a lie down, or just being really tired in meditation, kind of falling asleep is often what can happen in meditation. And torpor is a kind of mental fog, kind of a mental kind of tiredness, or maybe dream-like vague state. And then the last one, nearly there, is doubt. So doubt is when we're not really sure if we're doing the right kind of meditation, or maybe this teacher isn't the right teacher for me. Maybe I can't meditate, I'm not the kind of person that can meditate. Or does meditation really work? Why would anybody meditate when there's all sorts of other really useful, really engaging things that are better to do in the world? So doubt is common. So I don't know if you, do you kind of experience any of that? Does that kind of ring true for you? Yeah, yeah. So these are kind of human experiences. These are very human hindrances, if you like, to an easeful, free mind or experience. And there are some counter kind of antidotes to these. And these are kind of qualities that we're looking for in meditation. And whatever hindrance you're experiencing, you can look to find the counterpart, the antidote to that hindrance. So these hindrances will be there in meditation. But if we can acknowledge them and learn to kind of understand what they are, then we can look to the other, the antidote. And so these are qualities, positive qualities, that we might find as an antidote. So for sense desire, there's contentment, there's enjoyment, there's pleasure in what you're doing now in the present moment, as opposed to what you could kind of have. For ill will, there's kindness, there's understanding, empathy, love. And that may well be for yourself as well as for whatever that situation is. For anxiety and restlessness, there's calm, anything that can bring calm for you. And for some people, that might be doing some exercise before the meditation to kind of calm your body or even your mind. Anything that can bring calm. Maybe people often use candles and incense to create a kind of calm atmosphere. For sloth and torpor, there's energy, so anything that might kind of wake you up a little bit. So again, exercise, light levels in the room. As I was talking earlier, there's this balance between calm and energy. So maybe you need more calm, maybe you need more energy, and whatever hindrance you're experiencing, you can tune into that. And for doubt, this is an interesting one, because you might think, and I didn't say this, but it's really important to say that critical thinking and our cognitive faculty is necessary. That's really important, to question things, okay, to be clear in our thinking. But this is doubt in a kind of like, oh, I'm not really sure, it's indecision. It's kind of thinking, or thinking, oh, I can't do this, I'm not the kind of person that can do this. And so you might think that an antidote to doubt would be certainty, like we just need to know. But actually it's really hard to know something for definite, isn't it? You know, it's hard to know for sure. So the antidote to doubt is traditionally commitment. So even though you might not be sure, maybe this isn't the right meditation for you, maybe this teacher isn't the right teacher for you, but you could just try it. You could see how it is, try it out, test it out in your experience, and maybe persevere with it for a little while. And you might find that there are some positive results. There's another really good analogy for this, which is that if we want to find water, we could dig in many different places. We could dig lots of holes looking for the water, but we might never find it. But if we just choose one place to dig and we dig deep enough, the water will be there. So there are so many practices to choose from, but if you find you're drawn to one, but even if you're not sure if it's the right one, maybe just commit to it for a while and see what effect it has. And maybe it will bring some positive effect for you. So they're the antidotes, if you like. Contentment or enjoyment, kindness, love, compassion, calm, energy, and commitment. So in meditation, if we're experiencing these hindrances, we can look to cultivate those antidotes, those opposites. And what we can also do is just label the hindrance as a hindrance and see it for what it is, which is very different to getting really caught up in it. So if you're finding you're blaming or you're kind of really angry with your friend for saying something to you that, or a stranger maybe, why were they doing that? That's such a weird thing to do and such an unfriendly thing to say. Oh, that can be quite intoxicating. But if we can see, this is ill will, this is aversion, and label it as that, we can kind of stand back a little bit from it, almost befriend it and kind of acknowledge that, accept it, okay, this is ill will. And that can give us a bit of space around that hindrance, and that space might help us to find a way through. So that's labeling. It's really classic, really helpful. Naming, it's like finding the true name of what you're experiencing in meditation. And so if we're finding these hindrances, if we're finding an antidote, or we're able to move through the hindrances, then we may find quite expansive mental states, quite blissful experiences, serene experiences. We might have an open mind, a clear mind, a warm heart. We may feel very loving. We might have a broad, expansive consciousness through meditation. That is possible. And I really recommend trying the guided meditations up in the meditation tent, or finding any meditation that you're drawn to here and seeing how that goes for yourselves. I'm just going to end with a little bit of a kind of personal history of my own meditation practice, and then I'll open it out to questions. But yeah, these expansive states of mind, it's not like I necessarily experienced them strongly immediately, but I did find that when I started to meditate, I noticed a difference. Not everybody does, but you might find that if you're meditating regularly, you find things are coming easier to you in life, or you're finding you're understanding yourself better. And that's definitely what I found. I found that if I didn't meditate, I'd kind of find things a bit clunkier. So there can be some positive effects to meditation that if you try it out, you'll experience. And it might be that just if you stop meditating, you realise you're not doing it as other things happen. And that was my experience. When I came to meditation, I saw myself as a very shy person, as somebody who couldn't really speak very well, wasn't very articulate, couldn't speak to strangers, quite limited, quite restricted in a way. And I didn't think that that view of myself could change. I thought that was just me. But as I meditated, I found that I was different to how I thought I was. And gradually, more and more change, I experienced more and more change, and I changed in ways that I didn't think was possible. And that was almost like magic. I didn't know that was going to happen. But as I meditated regularly, I found that change, that growth happened for me. And what really worked for me were having particular practices that I was doing regularly. So personally, I did the mindfulness of breathing, focusing on the breath, and the metta bhavana, which means the cultivation of loving kindness. And these are the meditations that you could be guided through up at the meditation tent. So I did those meditations regularly, alternating the meditations, and they had a strong, they still have a transformative effect on my life. It's not always easy, as I've said. Sometimes it's really enjoyable. It's very individual. Everybody's experience of meditation can be particular. It's really great to meditate with other people that you can talk to about your meditation, because although it's an individual experience, usually there are things that other people have experienced. Even if it's not the person you're talking to, they may well know somebody else who has had what you're experiencing happened to them. So sharing your experience of meditation with others, being guided, or having other people to meditate with, I really recommend. We were teaching meditation at Glastonbury Festival last year, and some people had just been meditating with their app on their phone, and they were getting on really well with that, but they were really happy to find a place and a group of people that they could meditate with, and then talk to people about meditation afterwards.